Ave, and welcome to Emperors of Rome, a podcast about the rulers of the ancient Roman Empire. I'm your host, Matt Smith, and joining me today is Dr. Colleen Davenport, an ARC DECRA Senior Research Fellow at the University of Queensland. He's the co-author of a book called Fronto, Selected Letters, published by Bloomsbury, which brings us to... This is episode LXVI, Fronto. Seamless segue. When Marcus Aurelius was a young man, he was important enough to be given the best education Sesterce could provide, in the form of a number of prominent tutors. One of those was the respected senator Marcus Cornelius Fronto, who remained close to Marcus Aurelius for the rest of his life. His letters to and from the emperor, as well as their relationship, give us a rare insight behind the scenes of imperial power. Here's Colleen Davenport.
Fronto was probably the foremost Latin orator of the Antonine period. He was from a town called Curta in North Africa, and he was from a well-to-do aristocratic family of the town, but he and his brother were the first members of the family to enter the senatorial order in Rome. And the way in which Fronto accomplished this was that he went to Rome as a teenager to study. He studied with a philosopher and an orator, and then he began to make his name as an orator in the law courts. So he was essentially a lawyer, and that was a way to win friends and clients, and then you take on further cases. And certainly by the time of the reign of the Emperor Hadrian, he was the foremost orator in the courts at Rome.
With his career, do we know where he was and when he was, and how do we know this sort of thing?
Yeah, so we're talking about the 2nd century AD here, so the reign of the Emperor Hadrian from AD 117 to AD 138. We know about his exploits under Hadrian from a reference in the history of Cassius Dio, but also from his own correspondence in which he talks about delivering speeches in praise of the Emperor Hadrian in the Senate, though he didn't actually like the Emperor Hadrian very much at all, and he felt this was somewhat of an imposition. That most of what we know of Fronto's life comes from his own correspondence. There are stray references, for example, in Marcus Aurelius's Meditations, and by later writers in late antiquity, when they talk about Fronto as the second greatest orator behind Cicero. So that's certainly very high praise indeed.
So what are these letters that we have then? What are they telling us, and I suppose where are they from?
There's about 200 letters surviving, but that's probably only half of the original corpus. Now, they were probably put together in the 3rd century AD. They were certainly known in the 3rd and 4th century AD, and the manuscript we have was written in the 5th century AD, but then was later reused in the 7th century for the Acts of the Council of Chalcedon. And so because it was reused by Christian authors, they had to scrape off Fronto and then rewrite over it. It wasn't until the early 19th century, until 1815, when Cardinal Anglo Mai, who was prefect of the Ambrosian Library in Milan, used chemical reagents to reveal Fronto's original correspondence beneath the Acts of the Council of Chalcedon. And then a few years later, he found some more of the manuscript in the Vatican Library in Rome. So even though Fronto's letters were well known in late antiquity, they were then lost for centuries until rediscovered in the 19th century. And it's a wonderful treasure trove of correspondence.
When you say reused, were they actually reusing the paper? Is that what you mean?
Yes, exactly. So it's a palimpsest. So you have Fronto on the bottom, and then they reused it for the Acts of the Council of Chalcedon. And that was very common. Parchment was expensive, and we had all these wonderful church councils that needed to be recorded forevermore.
These being letters, though, the intention for them wouldn't be to be published or to be kept or preserved in this sort of way, would they?
Yeah, there's two different ways to write letters in the Roman world. The first is to write letters for publication. This is very much the Pliny the Younger model. It's very self-conscious. You're writing a history of yourself through letters. You're certainly sending them to your friends and acquaintances, but you're writing them with an eye to publication so that everyone will know your future greatness. Fronto's letters do not seem to have been written with that in mind. Many of them are very, very short indeed. We know, for example, that sometimes Marcus Aurelius and Fronto would write to each other on the same day. and exchange letters back and forth between Fronto's house on the Esquiline and the Palatine in Rome, where Marcus Aurelius was living. Their happy wishes for your birthday, or I hope your daughter is feeling better. And many of them are much more extensive in terms of training Marcus Aurelius to write Latin literature at the highest level. It's clear that they were not written for publication. We don't quite know who collected them. It's been suggested, plausibly, I think, that it was a member of Fronto's family who wanted to advertise their connection with the emperors.
What did the letters tell us then about Fronto's life? If we take it back to what was he doing as a senator? So they're not really about his time as a senator under Hadrian, but he's also a senator under the time of Antoninus Pius. And that's when these letters kind of start.
That's right, yes. So because of his reputation under Hadrian, Hadrian's heir and successor is Antoninus Pius, and then Antoninus adopts, as part of Hadrian's succession plan, two young men, the future Marcus Aurelius, then the future Lucius Verus. Fronto is picked to be the tutor to these two imperial princes, Marcus Aurelius and Lucius Verus. And the letters start in 139, by which time Marcus would have been 18, 19, but Lucius Verus would only be 9. So Fronto went straight into teaching Marcus Aurelius oratory and rhetoric and the art of the Latin language. So Marcus would already have had elementary training. He had a number of tutors in Greek and Latin grammar, in music, in mathematics. But then once he'd done his initial training, Fronto was then brought in to teach him Latin oratory. And he would have done the same for Lucius Verus, but he would have done it when Verus was much older.
What did these lessons consist of? Were they just trading letters and doing written work? Because I suppose he would be a senator at the same time. Or were there in-person classes? What would it look like?
It's a bit of both, actually. Obviously, because we have the letters, it emphasizes the teaching by correspondence. So Fronto and Marcus were sometimes in the same place, such as in Rome or at an imperial villa. But very often Fronto might be in Rome or at one of his estates in Campania, and Marcus might be travelling around Italy with Antoninus Pius and the imperial entourage. So in the letters, we see Fronto setting Marcus literary exercises. So he had to compose a speech or an essay on a particular theme or subject. What speech would have been given by Tiberius Gracchus in 133 BC or something. They're very often drawn from Roman history. And sometimes he has to imitate the style of a particular writer as well, particularly the great Republican prose stylist, but also sometimes poetry. And Fronto, in his letters, gives him pointers and tips on his use of the Latin language, the sort of words he should be using, and how to compose an argument in Latin. So it's really about the composition, how to marshal an argument in words. But this type of teaching is a product of the correspondent itself. We don't actually have records of their lessons. And they did also have face-to-face classes when they were together. For example, in the letters, sometimes Fronto asks Marcus to bring a piece of work that he's been writing for the next time they meet so they can discuss it. And then in one letter, Fronto talks specifically about their face-to-face tuition. So I've just got a good quotation from that letter. Fronto says, "I've observed that when you have been reading your exercises aloud to me, and I have changed one of the syllables in a word, you have decided to ignore me and not given it much thought." So it's very much like an old-style Oxford tutorial. It seems to be a bit of both, face-to-face classes as well as tuition by correspondence.
As Marcus Aurelius's life continues, and I suppose for Lucius Verus as well, do you see their relationship changing in the letters at all? Do you see it developing?
Very much so. With Marcus, we have much more correspondence than with Lucius Verus. There's several books of correspondence when Marcus was still Caesar, so during the reign of Antoninus Pius, and then another several books to him as Augustus. So we actually have 9 books of correspondence between Marcus Aurelius and Fronto, but actually only 2 between Fronto and Verus, only after 161 when Verus is emperor as well. So it could be the early correspondence was lost, because it's clear that when the correspondence with Verus starts in 161, that they have had a close relationship. out of the two of them, he definitely seems to have been much closer with Marcus Aurelius. So we can see their relationship really developing over the course of 25 years or more. So when it starts off in the early 140s, when Marcus is in his late teens and early 20s, there's several letters that deal with their studies, but also in a rather playful manner as well. Particularly Marcus, he tries to use the things that Fronto has been teaching him in their letters with each other. He uses a lot of alliteration or puns. For example, when Marcus is off at the Villa Magna, an imperial estate in central Italy, and they're watching grapes being picked for the wine, he then talks about looking for the pick of Fronto's letters as well. So he sort of adopts a sort of playful style there. There's also a lot of focus on the metaphor of love in the letters between Marcus and Fronto, and this has been the subject of considerable scholarly debate, because they do use very emotive and sometimes passionate language, and it's very easy to misinterpret this. Men in the Roman world used very, very florid and emotive language of love and affection a lot more than men, for example, in modern-day Australia or the UK. It's very common for them to say something like, oh, I love you more than anything in the world, which we might instantly interpret as some kind of actual sexual relationship, but that clearly is not the case here. It's indicating their fondness for one another. And sometimes it's a bit of a game to see who can come out with sort of the most elaborate similes or metaphors. For example, there's a great letter from Marcus to Fronto, in which Fronto has already sent him what Marcus considers the best letter that has ever been written. It's the perfect letter. And then Marcus writes back, and I'll just quote from the letter here, "I surrender. You have won. Take the crown and let the herald proclaim openly from the tribunal this famous victory of yours. The consul Marcus Cornelius Fronto is the winner, and receive the crown in the contest of the great friendship games." So Marcus is sort of saying, oh, teacher, I'll never be able to be better than you, and then goes on and talks about his deep love and affection for his teacher. But at the same time, we can never forget that Marcus was a Caesar, the heir apparent to Antoninus Pius, the current emperor. There's always a sense that he, despite being the pupil, he's still Fronto's superior. For example, in the early 140s, Marcus writes to Fronto to ask him not to prosecute Herodes Atticus, who is Marcus's tutor in Greek rhetoric, also an Athenian multimillionaire who has been charged with trying to swindle the Athenians out of money, which has been promised in the will of Herodes Atticus's father. And so in writing to Fronto asking him not to prosecute Herodes, Marcus seems to be acting on instructions from the Emperor Antoninus Pius. And in his first letter, Marcus initially talks about advising Fronto not to prosecute Herodes, but then goes on to say, "But why do I say advice? It is actually something I request from you." He's still very much Fronto's superior, and that Fronto is a courtier. He needs to keep on the side of the imperial family. So it's a very interesting power dynamic there.
So in 142 CE, Fronto becomes one of the consuls for a while, yep, for a period of 2 months. What can we know about his role and what he thinks about it from his letters?
This is a great privilege to become consul. There are more consuls in the 2nd century AD than there used to be under a republic, when there were only two consuls per year. By the 2nd century AD, there can be as many as 8 or 10 take up office for only 2 months. So Fronto was suffect consul for July and August of 142. Being stuck in Rome in the summer mustn't have been very pleasant at all. So the imperial family isn't actually in Rome when he's consul. So we know the imperial family has gone down to their villas in Campania and the Bay of Naples. So they've, like all the other Roman aristocrats, they've fled the city. And Fronto is caught in a bit of a bind here, because it's a great honour to be consul. It's the peak of your senatorial career, even if you're only suffect consul. And he's clear that he got this honour to be consul because of his relationship with the imperial family. He didn't have, for example, a long government career in the provinces. He hasn't commanded armies. He's got this consulship because of the favour of the imperial family and because he's a tutor to Marcus Aurelius. But at the same time, he's stuck in Rome in the summer. The imperial family is off down in Naples. He has to deliver a speech in thanks of Antoninus Pius in the Senate, but it's rather a thankless task because Antoninus Pius isn't there to hear it. But never mind, the ceremonial must go on, and he must hold games in celebration of his consulship. And of course, he also has to preside over the Senate with his consular colleague in the emperor's absence. it's mainly a ceremonial office at this time, though, as I said, it's such a great honor. But he exchanges letters with the imperial family who are in Naples at this time. Obviously, he's very proud of being consul, and he actually sends the speech that he delivered in thanks of Antoninus Pius to Pius, and Pius writes back and thanks him for this. And the letters with Antoninus Pius are more formal, but then we can get a sense of his true feelings with the letters he writes to Marcus. For example, he writes to Marcus, he says that being consul is a ball and a chain because he can't be there with the imperial family. And we know the imperial family is having a great time. They're celebrating the birthday of Domitia Lucilla, who is Marcus Aurelius's mother, and Fronto even sends his wife Cratia down to Naples to celebrate as well. So Fronto is sort of caught between two stools. He loves being consul. He loves the honor of being consul. But in the empire, closeness and intimacy with the imperial family is really what matters. But this is very common for Roman aristocrats. We can see, for example, in the letters of Pliny the Younger, letters of Symmachus, they complain about the burdens of office holding while at the same time glorying in their prestige.
Once Marcus Aurelius becomes the emperor then, I suppose that Fronto's relationship with him becomes very much one of advice giving.
Yes, we can certainly see a change in their relationship from about 145, when Marcus Aurelius is still Caesar, but when he marries Faustina the Younger, who's the daughter of Antoninus Pius. And it seems that it's around that point or shortly after that Fronto's formal instruction in Latin rhetoric stops. But they still continue to correspond throughout the period when Marcus is still Caesar. And then, yes, throughout his principate as emperor. The correspondence is still quite mixed. For example, there's a lot of personal correspondence about Fronto's health issues. Freely tells Marcus about the complaints of his bowels and his rheumatoid arthritis. And Marcus writes back about what his children are doing, for example, when they're sick or, you know, beginning to grasp pieces of bread. So there's that kind of personal relationship. But yes, certainly once Marcus Aurelius becomes emperor, you do get a sense that there is counsel going on some matters of state. For example, there's this great scandal about the will of elderly female relative of the imperial family who has left some precious jewelry to Marcus's wife Faustina and her daughters. And Marcus asks what the proper thing to do is, whether they should accept this inheritance or not. Also, sometimes they talk about the burden of being emperor. For example, Fronto tells Marcus that he needs to take a break sometimes. Marcus was an infamously conscientious emperor. We know that he would hold court till well into the evening and would often do paperwork late into the night. And Fronto writes to him and says, you know, even emperors need a break. I always quote this to my students sometimes, you know, if the Marcus Aurelius, the emperor, needs a break, then you can take a break as well. But at the same time, there's also, again, there's still this sense that Marcus is the emperor, and so is Lucius Verus. It's particularly interesting when Antoninus Pius dies and Marcus and Verus do become emperors, Fronto isn't quite sure what to do. He's out of Rome at the time, and he's not sure when the appropriate time is to visit the imperial palace. It's quite interesting that Verus talks about the burden of being emperor, is that he can't see Fronto as often as he would like, and that he's now got a lot more duties to take care of. So there's actually some rare insights into what it's like to be a Roman emperor that we get from this correspondence.
So one of the things that Lucius Verus asks Fronto to do is to write a history of the Parthian War, which I would love to have. I'm sure a lot of people would love to have it. What did this consist of?
Yes, so Lucius Verus gets sent off on the Parthian campaign while Marcus remains behind in Rome. And Verus sends a letter back to Fronto to say, I'm commissioning you to write this history of the Parthian War, and that he will send him his own diaries and commentaries, as well as the notes of his officers, so he could put together a really top-notch history that will, of course, glorify Lucius Verus's achievements. Now, Fronto never got around to writing the history in full. What we have are two letters. One to Verus, in which he says that his military exploits will never be as great as his exploits in rhetoric, because that's a true mark of an emperor. And of course, this is somewhat self-glorifying on Fronto's part, since he was the tutor to Verus in Latin rhetoric. But it also shows that, you know, Fronto is, you know, rather unsympathetic to military matters. And we have a brief sort of sample or treatment of the history of the Parthian War, which he actually sends to Marcus. It's called the Principiae Historiae, Beginnings of a History. And it's full of sort of formulaic historical commonplaces and comparisons from Rome's history. Clearly something that Fronto doesn't really seem interested in, except as a way of glorifying his own ability as a Latin writer, but also his relationship with Marcus Aurelius and Lucius Verus there as well. But it doesn't really seem to have been written at all.
So how far do the letters take us in Fronto's life? What are they like towards the end of them?
Towards the end, they're quite melancholy. And this is because in 165, Fronto loses his wife, Cratia, and also his three-month-old grandson within the space of a few months. And Fronto's life is certainly marked with considerable sadness in terms of his family. He and his wife, Cratia, had several children, six in total, but only a daughter, also called Cratia, somewhat confusingly, survives to adulthood. And she marries one of Fronto's former pupils, Aufidius Victorinus. And Fronto is very, very fond of his grandchildren, so he's absolutely devastated that in the space of a few months, both his wife and one of his grandchildren dies. I'll just read a bit from a very famous letter which he sends to Marcus on the death of his grandson. "Fortune has tested me throughout my whole life with many sorrows of this kind. For although I could pass over my other misfortunes, I have lost five children in the most wretched circumstances during the course of my life. Yes, I lost all five, and each I lost as an only child, enduring a succession of bereavements in such a way that no child was born to me except when I was already childless. And so I have already lost my children when there was no others left to offer comfort, and became a father again with grief fresh upon me." Which is a remarkable statement, because it's clear that, you know, Fronto and Cratia would expect a child, they'll be born, and then they die, and you should become pregnant again. This endless cycle of loss, which is really quite moving, but also was very common, even for aristocratic families, to lose multiple children very, very young. So he talks about how his daughter Cratia and his son-in-law Victorinus will also respond to the loss of their child. And he says, "My daughter will be sensible. She will follow the lead of her husband, who is an excellent man. He will console her by weeping with her, commiserating with her, talking with her, and simply by sitting in silence with her. I, her aging father, am not a suitable person to offer consolation, for it would have been more appropriate for me to die before the child." I think really gives us a sense of Fronto the man and the sense of grief which he and his family felt at these events. But it's actually shortly after this that the letters as we have them cease. We do assume that Fronto died in around 166 or not long after, perhaps as a result of the plague which was sweeping the empire at the time.
And he was writing all of these to the emperor at the time, so it's a remarkably close relationship if he feels that he can share this to someone who I suppose lost a lot of his own children as well during the course of his life.
Yes, definitely. I mean, Marcus and Fronto share a lot of family details. We hear about the illnesses of Marcus's own children. And it, yes, infamously, he and his wife Faustina had 14 children, and only one boy survived to adulthood. Unfortunately, that was Commodus, which didn't really turn out very well. But he had several daughters who survived and were married into the Roman aristocracy. But yes, I think it was very much this shared bond between them, in that they were able to talk about their grief to each other. And you know, they also communicate by sending each other books about consolation and how one should cope with these life events.
Do you have a favourite quote that you'd like to finish it on at all?
Okay, yes. My favourite quote is when Fronto is writing to Marcus Aurelius, who is ostensibly gone off to a coastal spot for a nice holiday, but is insisting on carrying on with his work. And Fronto writes to him to chide him about this. And Fronto writes, "But, you say, the circumstances surely require..." And then Fronto goes on to say, "What? Surely not study, surely not hard work, surely not continuous, unremitting, daily and eternal sweat? What bow is continually drawn? What strings are continually tightened? Our eyes actually last longer because we blink, and they will be ruined if they held only one fixed gaze. A garden repeatedly tended will bring forth no herbs and vegetables if it lacks the help of manure. But we choose land that has lain fallow for grain and staple crops, for its fertility is restored only by rest." So this, I think this is wonderful advice from Fronto to the emperor, telling him that he needs to relax, he needs to take a holiday, and I think it's wonderful advice that we should also abide by today as well.
That's Dr. Colleen Davenport, ARC DECRA Senior Research Fellow at the University of Queensland, and his book, Fronto, Selected Letters, is available from Bloomsbury. And you've been listening to Emperors of Rome. If you like this podcast, you can subscribe to it in iTunes,
Reviews are appreciated. Heck, ratings are appreciated. Appreciation is appreciated. You can like the Emperors of Rome on Facebook, and you can follow both myself and Kalane on Twitter. Kalane is at Emperor's Project, and I'm at Nightlight Guy. In the next episode of Emperors of Rome, Marcus Aurelius and Lucius Verus become emperor. So until then, I'm Matt Smith. You've been fantastic, and thanks for listening.